You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. Didn't think I was going to talk, did you? Well, I'm here, and I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, we have a sports expert who will help you bond with your sports-loving friends, even if you know absolutely nothing about sports. This doesn't matter a whit, but it might win you $200 on Jeopardy. Who's more rich and powerful, Taylor Swift or Katy Perry? And how big are the CMAs? Yeah, that big. Let's meet the friends. He's ready to share, but that's not all that unique these days, is it? Chris Martin is here.
Phil, this may be the most popular thing on the planet. I mean, like, right behind breathing.
And if you listen to this program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a five-star review. You're helping the show by doing that. Yes, please, go ahead and do that. Even if you don't listen on iTunes, just go ahead, log into iTunes, download the latest version of it, find us, and then where it says leave a comment, just go do it. As a matter of practice, everybody who listens to this program, just go for like 5 minutes. Spend 5 minutes on iTunes, leave a comment, overwhelm the iTunes people. And who knows what might happen? They might feature us the next day.
That would be cool.
Right next to Tom Brokaw or somebody famous like that.
Tom Brokaw has a podcast?
Oh, yeah, sure. He talks about fishing and tying shoes and stuff like that.
Oh, well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody has a podcast now, don't they?
They do.
Seems like.
My grandma has a podcast.
Does she?
She's been dead for years. Anyway, let's get the program started. Why don't we start the program over? You want to do that? No, it's fine.
Yeah, I like the opening.
It's fine. We'll be okay. I promise. Chris, thank you very much. We'll start with you since I don't see any other options at the moment. What is almost as big as breathing?
Facebook, Phil.
Really?
Facebook.
That big?
It's huge. The world's largest social network has surpassed yet another milestone with over 1 billion active users a day.
How much? 1 million?
Over 1 billion a day. Let me give you a little bit of different math.
Yeah.
So maybe we can wrap our heads around it.
Yeah, I'm having trouble.
Over 1 billion active users a day equates to about 1 in 7 people on the planet.
Oh, man. Can you imagine creating something that would be that popular in our lifetime in such a short period of time?
No. No, I can't imagine creating something like Facebook. It has literally become a monster.
Yeah.
And in all the good ways, I suppose. I mean, it's not a bad invention. It seems to connect people, give people a platform to be able to stay connected.
Yeah, but some people would argue that it is bad ultimately for society. I don't know. I think sooner or later everybody's going to come around and we'll forget. The people who think it's bad will die off and we'll forget those arguments.
Yes.
And it'll just become as ubiquitous as breathing.
Yes. Well, the proof is in the pudding, isn't it? I mean, look, when you have this many people in favor of something,
yeah,
I suppose it can't be all bad. By comparison, by the way, Twitter has only 320 million users, so less than a quarter of the amount of users daily
How far over the 1 billion mark has Facebook hit? Do we know?
Well, they record 1.5 billion users a month, so and a billion a day. So, in other words, at the end of every month, they're recording that there are 1.5 active users, and of that 1.5, 1 billion are using the site daily.
So on any given day, more people than who use Twitter don't use Facebook, even though they're signed up for Facebook.
Well, I don't know what you just said.
Did you say 300-something million?
Yeah, 327 million for Twitter.
And so 0.5 billion is 500 million, am I not?
Right, okay? Yeah, you're
so
absolutely right.
Every given day, 0.5 or 500 million people who are signed up for Facebook don't use Facebook.
That's
because
right.
At any given day, 1 billion, and there's 1.5 billion a month.
That's right. Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. 727 million of us, by the way, only use Facebook on our cell phones, which is interesting, and it makes up a huge portion of Facebook's ad revenue. Of course, with great power comes great money.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook earned $4.5 billion in revenue this third quarter alone.
And don't you feel like an idiot? I know I do, for not buying it, the stock, when it was $13?
You never know. You never know. You know, you get those tips. Did you get a tip about Facebook early on?
Well, it IPO'd at like $17. And it remember all the news? Oh, worst IPO ever. And it dropped from, it went up to like 21, then it dropped. And everybody was saying, oh, it's terrible. It's they should never, they came out too fast and went down to $13. And had you bought, you know, a couple hundred shares at 13 bucks, it's trading at like 180 bucks today, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, something
You'd
like that.
You'd be staying in the guest bedroom over at Zuckerberg's
yeah,
island.
That's right.
Private island.
Sure. What's it called? Maui? No, Oprah owns that.
It's over there, though. It's somewhere in Hawaii. He bought a huge chunk of one of those Hawaiian islands.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's doing all kinds of
things. And he's a smart dude, too. It's not like he didn't earn it.
Started out his college dorm room,
mm-hmm.
just advertising or setting up a platform for college students. Now look at it.
Yeah.
It's gotten completely out of hand, Phil.
It has.
What else? Is there anything else?
Oh, yeah. You know what?
I have more on that if you want to keep going.
Every dictionary out there puts out a press release every time they add some new words or phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And which dictionary? This week, another dictionary did that, right? Which one is it?
Collins Dictionary.
Oh, okay.
Collins Dictionary. I think where I remember it always being, what was it, Merriam-Webster?
Yeah, Merriam-Webster does
was about the only dictionary that anybody paid attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, but you go to the bookstore and you'll see the Collins right next to the Merriam-Webster's.
So it's a popular version.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it must be because of all the news headlines that they're making because Collins Dictionary has released its Word of the Year.
Ooh, really?
Yes, sir.
And what might that be?
The word, or words, really, is binge watch. That is the word of the year.
Is it a hyphenated word, or is it?
It is.
Okay.
Binge hyphen watch.
Yeah. Can't use it in Scrabble, then. No hyphens in Scrabble.
Hmm. Bummer.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe they'll let you combine it. Take the hyphen out. Binge watch. Seems like it's a single word.
Binge watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what everybody's doing. That's what most people are doing because of the way that we consume our entertainment now, especially our television.
Happens in my household all the time. I haven't done it personally. I've been in the room while it's happening, so I've, by osmosis, perhaps, participated.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughters are binge watchers, definitely. They'll watch an entire season of a show in a day or two.
They join many of us Americans.
Yeah.
By the way, binge watch is not a brand new word, but the usage tripled this year from last, so that's why it became Word of the Year. Some other words seeing a major increase in their use include manspreading. We remember that one. That's when you open up your thighs on the train.
Yeah, you got to sit a little bit just to make it comfy for the package.
Phil, you might be familiar with this word. Dad bod gets an honorable mention.
Oh, please. You had to bring that up? I'm going to the gym tonight, just to spite you.
A couple other ones. Transgender makes a huge leap in usage. Clean eating and ghosting. Do you know what ghosting is, Phil?
Is that when you crack your iPhone?
Nope.
What is that?
Ghosting is when you avoid all forms of communication with your significant other because you don't have the guts to actually break up with them in person.
Oh, really?
So you just completely stop texting, emailing, calling. You ghost on them. And that has become a popular word now, which means that more and more people are doing it. And I remember a time when you weren't afraid to pick up the phone and call somebody.
No,
you know?
That's true. Well, the fact is, the phone calls are not dead.
No.
But now it feels special, like getting a letter, right?
Yeah.
Somebody sends you a letter. Holy crap, they could have just texted me. But this has it has postage and stuff on it.
Yeah, my phone's ringing.
Yes, my phone's ringing. A new survey found that people still think that the best way to tell someone major news is with a phone call, like an engagement or a pregnancy. People also say it's the best way to close a business deal. I tend to agree with that.
Me too.
Because you can get lazy and just do the emails and the texts, and then you lose some of the nuance.
Right.
Here are three more results from the survey. 33% of people make or receive more than 5 calls a day. Who are these people?
I don't know, Jerry.
They're insurance salespeople, I think, is who they are. 83% of people in their 20s check their phone when they're out with their families. And 51% of people check their phone at least 3 times during a bad date. Only 8% check it that often during a good date.
Right. Yeah.
Which means that maybe there's a one-way opinion about whether it's a good date. You're on the phone. Maybe your date doesn't think it's such a great date.
No. And I've been on those dates before, and I think some people are just so trained to stare at their phone several times a day, and they can't help it.
Do you say, hey, you point at your eyes, up here, my eyes are up here.
Yes.
You do that?
Try to say, hey, listen, I'm sitting right here. Yeah. At least check it later.
Right. Hello, do I need to send you a text to get your attention?
Yeah.
Let me flash you my abs real quick to, you know, get you off base.
That's usually what I do, and then they regain focus.
Of course. Mm-hmm. That's all it takes. What's the matter with you? All right. Oh, big as the Oscars. Do you know what that is? The Oscars are huge on TV. Yeah. But as far as awards shows go, is there anything bigger than that or as big or as important to the rest of the country as the Oscars?
Hard to imagine there one is. As big as that.
Yeah, but there's something about as big.
What is it?
We'll find out next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
I start again.
Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.
Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and a big show on TV last night. Apparently, nobody put sunblock on the back of their neck because the CMAs, the Country Music Awards, are absolutely, as Donald Trump would say, huge.
They're huge.
Yeah, they certainly are. How huge are they, do you think?
You know, I'd have to take a guess because I don't have the actual Nielsen rating numbers, but I'm going to say they clock somewhere around the 15 million viewer mark.
Wow.
Which is good, especially in today's landscape. And last night, Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood were the hosts of the CMA Awards. I saw a couple clips of them. I think they left something to the imagination, but they did a good job. The big winners, however, last night were CMA Awards. At the CMA Awards were Little Big Town and Chris Stapleton, who I had never heard of. Until these CMA.
Well, I've never heard of almost all of these people. Are you a country music fan?
Well, I grew up in Idaho, Phil, so yeah, I am a country music
it's
fan.
It's required then, isn't it?
It is. I listened to a little bit of Chris Stapleton since I hadn't known him, and he has some good music. It's sort of that raw, old-school country, just, you know, acoustic guitar in his hand. Each of them won three awards last night, that being Little Big Town and Chris Stapleton. But Chris Stapleton owned the night, as several artists went out of their way to give him props. And he had a collaboration with Justin Timberlake, which I watched some of, and it was really good.
Really?
Yeah, the mixture between that sort of twangy country voice and then that R&B
voice.
You
know, there was a time at the CMAs, there was a time when Justin Timberlake wouldn't be all that welcome to the stage amongst the big hair and the sequins and all that kind of stuff that the country and Western singers used to have.
But 10-gallon hats.
Yeah, and it's not like that anymore, is it? It's very pop music oriented.
The lines are getting blurred, and especially when you look at artists like Taylor Swift and Carrie Underwood, and you know they seem to transition between genres.
Sure, yeah, okay. So who else? Well, what else was? What was that other group that you said was huge?
Little Big Town. Little Big Town won a few awards last night, but "Girl Crush," their song "Girl Crush" was the big reason why it won Single of the Year and Song of the Year. Have you ever heard "Girl Crush," Phil?
Yeah, let's give a listen.
I wanna taste her lips. Yeah, 'cause they taste like you. I wanna drown myself in a bottle of her perfume. I want her long blonde hair.
That's a good song.
I want her.
Give it a second and you'll get the hook.
Touch. Yeah, 'cause maybe then you'd want me just as much. I got a girl crush.
Wow, listen to that old 50s guitar style, huh?
Crush.
Yeah, I heard this song a while ago, really fell in love with it, but also there's a little bit of controversy around the song on whether or not, is the artist talking about actually having a crush on a girl? Or what I think the claim is that she's jealous of a girl that has the guy that she wants, but sure sounds like she likes girls.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess you could go that way. But to me, it sounds like she wants to get to the guy through the girl. And, you know, it's like she said, if she kisses the girl, she tastes him, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And drowns in her perfume. But yes, I agree with you, Phil. I think that's what the lyrics are meant to be about. But always fun.
Good song, though. I mean, that, to me,
like that?
That doesn't sound a bit like country music.
No, it's really well done, and you're right. There's another example of how you can blur the lines between those genres.
Yeah, all right. What's that group called again?
That's Little Big Town.
They got a bunch of ladies singing in that one, too, or just what is that?
It's a collaborative effort.
Oh,
there's
okay.
guys in the band, but I think it's a female yeah. lead singer. By the way, Miranda Lambert won top female vocalist, and while
oh.
accepting the award, she said, quote, I needed a bright spot this year.
Yeah, you know what? And maybe that's because Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton admit finally, after we made a big deal of it 2 days ago on this program, they had no choice but to come out and admit that they are officially a couple. Gwen and Blake, this is a quote from their rep. Gwen and Blake are longtime friends who have very recently started dating. And Miranda Lambert, who you mentioned, is not surprised at all. She says she was not surprised to hear the romance. Quote, they were always pretty flirty. Miranda and Blake were on the rocks on and off and knew that this could always be a possibility. This is from a person in Miranda's camp. And not only was she not surprised, she doesn't care. Here's another quote. She has nothing against Gwen and thinks she's a very talented artist. Whomever Blake is with, she wishes them the best. And what was Miranda dressed like yesterday at the show? Was she in full Rebound attire?
Yeah, I don't remember offhand, but Miranda Lambert is an attractive young lady. She knows how to dress to accentuate
I
herself.
Heard that she had little pink hair extensions
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She did.
Was that some kind of reference back to Gwen Stefani?
I don't.
Who,
you know,
who very often has pink hair extensions?
Might be.
Yeah.
Might be a little throw out there to
was
her.
It?
I don't know.
Was that her hats off,
mm-hmm.
or was that more of a dig?
I don't know. It sounds to me, after that quote you read, like she feels pretty amicable
that
about
was
the split.
Written for her,
of
by
course.
Her publicist.
And by the way, Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani,
yeah.
they didn't come out and announce it themselves behind some podium. Their representatives
yeah.
say, "No,
yeah.
it's true.
Of
They're
course.
Seeing each other
because behind you know closed doors." Miranda Lambert says, if he gets anywhere near me, I'm popping a slug in his...
That's right,
right,
exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to bust his kneecaps.
All right. Anything else on the CMAs worth noting?
Yeah, there. I like the fact that there were some old school artists up there. Hank Williams Jr. performed
oh, yeah.
with Eric Church with the song Are You Ready for Some Country?
Yeah.
We remember he got in trouble with the NFL a little while ago. And Keith Urban helped John Cougar Mellencamp perform his classic Pink Houses. I love John Cougar.
Is he still
or John Mellencamp?
And which one is he using?
He dropped the Cougar. It's John Mellencamp.
Yeah, because that was a made up name, the Cougar part.
Little Pink Houses for you and me, Phil.
No, is that what they sang?
Mm-hmm.
Never liked that song.
Yeah, it's one of his more popular ones, but he's got a lot of good jams.
All right, from the CMAs to something perhaps as big in the cosmic universe. One of the most important images in all Star Wars geekdom is Princess Leia in her slave bikini.
Oh, yeah.
You know the scene where Jabba the Hutt's having his way with her? Remember that?
She's chained up, right?
If you ever get the director's cut, you actually see the love scene between Princess Leia and Jabba the Hutt.
Oh,
but it's the director's God. Cut that you need. It's on disc 5, I think.
That's terrible.
You never saw that? No? Okay.
Thankfully not.
But now that Star Wars is owned by Disney, it's increasingly hard to get the director's cut, but we may also have seen the last of the slave bikini. A Marvel Comics artist named J. Scott Campbell basically said during a Facebook conversation with a friend, he said he'd heard from two sources that Disney was going to stop doing slave Leia merchandise. He added, quote, we can't even draw Leia in a sexy pose at Marvel, let alone in that outfit. We also had a 3D SL statue killed at a major manufacturer because there will no longer be any SL, Slave Leia, merchandise. But he tried to downplay it later on Twitter, saying, quote, "For the record, I didn't say this with any authority. I simply mentioned it seemed to be the case." And this is timely and interesting, of course, because there's a new movie coming out. But the recent issue of Interview magazine, Carrie Fisher talked to Daisy Ridley, who's one of the stars of the new movie. And she told her, quote, "You should fight for your outfit. Don't be a slave like I was."
Mm. I had a play on words there.
Yeah.
That Star Wars movie, by the way, Phil, it's going to be huge.
Huge.
It's going to be huge.
All right.
Spectacular.
Good. Very good. Oh,
it's the greatest movie of all time.
One more thing. Speaking of huge, there are 350 different languages spoken in the United States. You ever wonder why we don't communicate a whole lot?
Por qué?
150 different Native American languages, and everything else from Ukrainian to Pennsylvania Dutch.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway.
And I only know one of them. Jeez, what a loser.
You know, the Pennsylvania Dutch guy that you know?
No, I only know one language.
Hey, you've been waiting for 2 weeks to find out the result of the trip Manny the movie guy had planned with Antonio Banderas. Well, you get to hear what happened, my friend, next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. It's time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex. Joining us now, and just back from a whirlwind coast-to-coast trip accompanying an international motion picture superstar, it's KMIR TV Palm Springs movie reviewer Manny the Movie Guy.
How are you guys? Nice to see you guys.
Yes, just excellent now that you're here, even better. Because, Manny, okay, spill the dirt. What happened between you and Antonio Banderas?
I can't spill all the dirt.
Oh. No? You don't kiss and tell, huh?
It may have some, what do you call that, the sky high or sky mile?
Oh, the mile high?
Yeah,
are you kidding?
No.
You're not kidding.
I am kidding.
Oh, okay, good. I just want, you know.
I am kidding.
I want to be clear here.
I'm not quite Madonna yet. I actually felt like Madonna in Truth or Dare when I saw him.
No kidding. Now, how close in proximity there in first class were you and Antonio?
Unfortunately, I wasn't in the first class, but it was close.
Oh.
Close enough.
Yeah, but you were first in your class. I do recall that. Yeah.
And that's right. Speaking of that, that's the movie we're going to talk about next week. It's for the Fantastic the 33.
Oh, the 33. And that's the story of those miners who were trapped in South America.
Chilean.
Yeah, okay. All right, fine. Well, then we have movies coming out this weekend.
Big films. They lift the box office slump that Hollywood has been experiencing this month.
Yeah, well, so where do we start? The James Bond movie, Spectre?
Let's be nostalgic first, although these two films are actually quite nostalgic, but let's start with the Peanuts movie.
Ooh, Charlie Brown, Lucy, Linus, Snoopy.
See, you already love it. You grew up with them, I suspect.
Oh, yeah. I used to sit there with my sister watching those things and just rolling on the floor laughing.
Aww.
When Snoopy would get on top and become become the Red Baron. He'd fight the Red Baron, Red Baron?
I just watched the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown episode over Halloween weekend. They
sure.
had it on.
And coming before you watch A Charlie Brown Christmas, I suggest you watch this movie first. This is the first feature film based on the characters in 35 years, commemorating the 65th anniversary of the comic strip and the 50th anniversary of A Charlie Brown Christmas. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
The Peanuts movie is a fitting homage to its creator, Charles M. Scholl.
Yes.
It's made for adults who grew up with the characters, but also created with kids in mind with all those colorful cinematography. The film, set during the late 50s, early 60s, Charlie Brown time,
mm-hmm.
revolves around our all-time favorite Snoopy, and as he and his pals battle their arch nemesis, the Red Baron.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, besides Kristen Chenoweth as Fifi, Snoopy's love, there are really no big-name Hollywood stars voicing the characters. But here's the best part. Snoopy and Woodstock are voiced by the original talent, the late, great Bill Melendez, through the magic of digital work. I like that.
Wow. So then
we will hear, or hearing Snoopy and Woodstock as how we heard them back in the day.
Now, is this movie in 3D?
It's in 3D, yes.
Why?
You know, just to capitalize on the 3D thing.
But do people even care about that?
Exactly. No, honestly, you don't need to see it in 3D.
Yeah, and they don't do those stupid 3D gags where it's just you know what I'm talking, and don't take any offense to this.
Thong, yeah.
It's like Filipino TV, you know, where you use the effects just because you have them.
Exactly. But this one, though, is from the creators of Ice Age and Rio. This is a sweet-natured nostalgia adventure with the importance of community at its heart. So, you know, that's a good message. So go ahead and give the Peanut movie a great big hug.
So help me out here so people don't think I'm a racist idiot. It's right about Filipino TV, right? You just, right? You know what I'm talking about?
You are a racist idiot.
Oh, come on!
We have iPhones, you know. We have Apple TV.
No, I mean the production value of the TV shows.
We do have those. We have great production values now.
Oh, do you?
Okay. Yes.
All right, but you use all of it that's available to you at any given moment just
Phil,
because you have
Phil,
it.
Phil, you're just digging the hole digging deeper, buddy.
Should I stop?
In. Yes.
What's that one show called? Wowie?
Oh, Wowie. Very good.
Yeah. I've watched that.
Right.
And okay, fine. Go ahead, watch it and see if I'm a racist idiot.
It is just, if you're pretty much, it's, you know, Filipino TV is just like Mexican TV, you know, with all of the production numbers and everything.
Without the clowns.
Like a Japanese TV and Korean TV, really.
Right, without the clowns. Though.
Without the clowns, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so, well, sometimes there are some clowns.
All right, maybe I'll fly out there and I'll fill that void. Now, Spectre, the last James Bond movie that this actor vows to ever be in.
Supposedly, you know, but this globe-trotting adventure, the 24th of the series, finds the contemporary franchise in a bit of a dilemma. It has become formulaic and predictable.
No, really? I mean, you can't go wrong with a 007 movie.
It's not to say that this one is not engrossing. On the contrary, Spectre is entertaining, but you can easily connect the dots. Following the events that happened in Skyfall, Daniel Craig returns, perhaps for the last time, as 007. He uncovers a mysterious message that may reveal the truth about an organization known as Spectre.
Mm.
Rail finds as good as M, but you will miss Judi Dench in the role. The big bad villain here is Christoph Waltz as the enigmatic Oberhauser. James Bond fans may easily figure out his true identity.
Ooh.
Now, director Sam Mendes, who created a much, much better Skyfall, is back, but this time, instead of finding fresh ideas, he unabashedly embraces the tried and true.
Yeah.
Spectre can be seen as made for your eyes only, James Bond fans, but have no fear. Casual Bond followers may still find some hidden treasure in this $300 million movie.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Right. I know, right? It's huge.
And is Daniel Craig quitting because Christoph Waltz probably made the same amount of money?
Probably.
Yeah.
He should.
He's a good actor, isn't he?
You know what? Daniel Craig started in the indie cinema, you know, all those indie storytelling, and I think he just wants to go back to that.
Yeah? All right.
Well. You know? And that's probably why he loves, I suspect he likes Skyfall better than this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go. But this one still gets 3 out of 4 kisses for me. Shaken, not stirred.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Any more jet setting this week? Or?
No, I'm actually relaxing. You know what? In the world of TV, this month is sweeps month. It's November ratings period.
Oh.
So I gotta stay put and help my station be number one as it should be.
KMIR-TV, Palm Springs.
I'm the movie guy.
Yeah, that's of course. Go to MannyTheMovieGuy.com and watch his videos. You'll say, wow, wow, wee.
Very good. Great close.
Talk to you next week, Manny.
Bye, guys.
Bye. All right. He's too kind. Could have really
too kind. He called you a racist idiot.
I know. We're going to use that for a promo, right?
Right. Yes,
we're going to cut that out?
Somebody cut that audio immediately.
Yes, right. Flag it. Hey, coming up, sports for non-sports types here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Now, I love sports as much as the next guy, but I'll be honest with you, I don't remember all the names and the stats and the scores like it seems like a lot of guys do, and frankly, it makes me a little self-conscious when there's a sports conversation going on, and so what I'll do is I'll kind of let it play its course and say a lot of, yeah, that's right, yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking, and then change the subject gracefully and go into one of my wheelhouse topics.
There you go.
Do you do that? No, you know all the stats, don't you?
I know some stuff, but I'll do the same thing. I'll listen first and then repeat back keywords that I heard in the conversation that was being had.
Yeah, yeah, but you know...
Oh, yeah, that guy?
I don't know my Keyshawns from my, give me another name. Are there any others? Joes.
From your Andres.
Exactly. Joining us live is a sports broadcaster who has covered 15 Super Bowls, 10 U.S. Opens, 15 Final Fours, and a boatload of every other sort of sporting event you could think of. She's the author of the book, Invade the Man Cave, Sports Secrets Guys Don't Share. It's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Kate Delaney, welcome. You're already making me feel nervous. All that.
Hell, don't be nervous. You're in the man cave. I'm outside of the man cave looking in.
Oh, all right. Well, fine. Come on in. We've got chips and bean dip.
Bean dip. Well, I want to tell you real quickly where I am. I'm at Six Shooter Cellars in just outside of Fredericksburg, Texas, which is wine country, my friends.
Ooh.
And very much football. It's all about UT, and it's all about still the Dallas Cowboys and... You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Football, football, football.
UT, University of Texas. See, I know what that means. And I also know that the UT folks don't like the A&M folks very much.
Absolutely. It's a rabid rivalry. And you know what? You see, you know something about sports. That's what sports is like. It's like politics. It's you and them.
Yeah. Right. Okay, fine. But see, once you get out of Texas... That doesn't matter much at all, does it?
No, I think it still does matter. If you look at the West Coast, if you look at UCLA and USC, and you look at Oregon, and I think college football, I led you down this path, but down this rabbit hole, but college football has the biggest rivalries. In sports.
Yeah. All right, but in general, Kate, it seems like there are two types of people, those who know a lot about sports and then everybody else. So maybe you know a little or you just don't know anything. Still, you want to fit in with the crowd. So what do you recommend doing?
Yeah, well, here's what I would say. I think it's just kind of like, you know, if you go to a wedding and you want to know who you're sitting next to, where's the seating chart, you're going to have a blabbermouth next to you, you're going to have some really cool people with you. You don't know, so you need to know the arrangement, especially in football, but in any other sport. The key thing is, it sounds so stupid, but you buy a program and you know who the players are. You know who, let's say it's football. You know the quarterback. You know the offensive line and the defensive line and the other team. And it's easy because it's all laid out for you, including what the penalties are. If you have no idea what the Zebras are doing when they're waving their hands up and down.
Yeah. All right. So what's the benefit to putting some effort into your sports knowledge? Is it a bonding experience?
I think it's a bonding experience. And it also can be a cha-ching experience because of the fact that so many people are in fact, business-wise bonded by sports.
Oh,
it's sort of the last bastion, kind of.
So you mean, as opposed to going out and playing golf with the boss, if you know a thing or two about sports and you can kibitz about it, you might get ahead.
Absolutely. You took the words right out of my mouth, Phil.
You were going to say kibitz?
Kibitz, I say it all the time.
Oh, okay. Good. You said cha-ching and kibitz, and let's see if we can get some more fascinating conversation going. Now, is it really possible to fake it if you look up some stats and try to memorize some names and you're just, you haven't watched a ball game your entire life?
I think you don't want to fake it too much, because if you fake it too much, then you can get caught in the conversation. It's kind of like when people say to you, do you speak Spanish? And you say, oh, sí, un poquito, and then un poquito. And before you know it, you're sucked into a conversation. You have no idea what they just said to you with somebody who's speaking another language. Let's say if you tell them you speak the language,
Yeah. You
kind of exaggerated what you knew. You don't want to exaggerate.
Yeah.
But that's why I wrote the book. The book is just short of all the different sports, because I couldn't find anything like that out there for anybody that was listeners, frankly, that were asking me, hey, I know nothing about horse racing. Hey, I know nothing about the NHL. I don't really understand the NBA. And this way you have a little bit of the history and some of the fun stuff, and you kind of could get pulled into it a little bit more and enjoy it.
Right, right. Again, the book's called Invade the Man Cave, Sports Secrets Guys Don't Share. Kate Delaney's the author, and she's on with us right now. So back to the cha-ching there for a moment and getting ahead. Does it make logical sense then, from a personal growth aspect, to join a fantasy league?
Well, I'm in three of them. So I'm obviously an anomaly in this sense.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, when you join it, what happens is when you join a fantasy league, that's where you do understand some nuances of the game, because you have to put a roster together. So now you got to really kind of pay attention. You're at least paying attention to the highlights. You know what running backs are doing well, you know what defenses are doing well, and you're putting your team together, so you have to understand who the top players are and who you're going to pull in each and every week. It definitely gives you a better understanding.
Yeah, see, I've tried the football fantasy once, because ever since the Rams left Los Angeles, I left the NFL, but I tried the football fantasy once, and after 3 or 4 weeks of my kicker being my top scorer, I figured it wasn't for me.
Time to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. There's where a little bit of knowledge helps.
A little bit. Now, in hockey, I dominate. In baseball, I do pretty well, but I just don't have the time for it anymore. But just the same, I did get up to speed, and I knew all the players, and I knew a lot of stats and all of that, and I can have a conversation about it. But then there are those who say, hey, look, fantasy is ruining the sport. And a lot of these guys are the ones who are either alumni from UT or Texas A&M.
Probably. But see, how many people now think of FanDuel? You think of DraftKings. What do they say? 57 million people. I keep going back to football. 57 million people play fantasy football. But just like baseball, just like hoop, more people are getting into that. You did it, so you saw what that was like.
Right.
And it's a huge business. I mean, they're making money hand over fist.
Yeah. You know what? Well, I've got you. But since you're such a sports broadcaster and you look into these things, and it's not necessarily the topic that that you're covering in your book, but you probably have an opinion on this. A couple of weeks ago, we had a fellow on the program, and the name escapes me, but the assertion was, that the FanDuels and all these other companies like that, the daily and the weekly fantasy plays, are infiltrating and ruining professional sport. In fact, many of the professional teams and leagues, save for the NFL, have a stake in the success of these organizations, which could very easily compromise the game, and point shaving starts coming up in conversation when you start thinking about that sort of thing. Have you read much about this? Have you an opinion about it? Is sports doomed?
I've had people on the show to talk about that, and what's going to happen now? The government's kind of trying to work their way in there, and with these so-called investigations. And listen, I think that if somebody wants to cheat, if somebody wants to rip us off, if somebody wants to perpetrate a fraud on us, it can happen. If you look back in the history of sports, think of Shoeless Joe Jackson. Think of some of the terrible things that happened where points were shaved and games and outcomes were changed. And that was before the explosion of any kind of so-called fantasy sports leagues. So I'm of the mind that if somebody wants to do it, they'll find a way to do it, and maybe that's naive, but I reserve judgment to say that I think it's just going to destroy the business. You see Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, he's completely embracing gambling.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
But well, what's going to happen, Commissioner Silver, when some of your referees, they take an entire life savings and put it down on one of the teams that they're officiating. And then that referee starts calling a double dribble and traveling and palming the ball and all those things that they let fly in the age of Showtime. And you know, basically change the course of what would have happened had they let those things go like they normally do.
Yeah. See, and therein lies the problem. The problem is where you would have to really police the game. And remember, the great Pete Rose, whatever you think about him, he was a great baseball player. But is there a doubt that he gambled or not? And I remember at the Hall of Fame ceremonies for Nolan Ryan, I asked him who should be in the Hall of Fame, and he told me, Pete Rose, he should be in the Hall of Fame, but he should never be allowed back in baseball.
Yeah.
But he was still a great pound-for-pound player.
Yeah. You know, they should put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame and then don't allow him to walk inside the Hall of Fame to see that he's inside the Hall of Fame.
That's right. You have to send somebody in to get a video and bring it out to him.
Right. All right, back to the topic at hand. Actually, we don't have time to go back to the topic, but originally we were talking about sports for people who are not sports folks. But all the secrets about knowing your sports and how to bond with your friends and with your boss and getting ahead in life, it really comes back to sports, and that's why you need Kate Delaney's book. It's called Invade the Man Cave, Sports Secrets Guys Don't Share, and it's in the store right now at philhewlettandfriends.com. Go there, buy it, and succeed. Kate Delaney, thank you so much.
Phil, thank you. It was a lot of fun. Anytime.
All right, good. How about tomorrow? Kidding. Tomorrow's too soon. All right. Take care. Oh, she was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah? So I'd see you were kind of quiet over there, and I'd help him out because you're one of those guys that knows all the stats.
Nah, I don't. I don't really know all of the stats. But you do such a good job with an interview, I don't feel any need to interject.
Oh, gosh.
Huh? And sit back and watch the master do his work.
You know who's a big, she's one of the best athletes on the planet. I think most of us would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about tennis star Serena Williams.
Oh.
And she's in the news for not for her tennis ability this week.
No, she's in the news because she's a superhero.
Yes. I think maybe we suspected that for all this time.
On and off the tennis court, she's a superhero. She recently recounted a story of a dude trying to steal her cell phone while she was out at dinner. She saw the guy swipe her phone and run out to the parking lot. She ran after him like a female Flash and confronted him out in the parking lot, asked him if he might have accidentally picked up her phone. And the petty thief played it off like it was a mistake. She came back into the restaurant, Phil, to a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And also released this message that says, just because you're a lady doesn't mean you're a victim. You can also be a hero.
I like that.
Or heroine.
That's right. Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. It went by so fast, but there's so much more coming up, including average folks beat back a multi-million-dollar political campaign to put a stop to folks renting out their homes to vacation travelers. What next, then, for Airbnb? We're going to hear about that on Phil Hewlett and Friends next.
I start again. Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Ports of Call, Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553. And I hear
here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Ports of Call Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, have you ever considered renting out a private room in your house, or maybe the whole house, to a vacation traveler from Europe or somewhere else around the world? Well, hotels aren't real happy with that concept for some reason. We'll talk to somebody who's real good at renting out her properties. Also,
We have a list of the highest paid women in music. Wonder who's at the top. And how much is it costing you a year to go out to lunch every day? Have you ever added that up? We'll add it up for you right here on the program. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. Chris Martin is here as well. And Chris, we'll head over to you for our first story this hour. And so there are some young ladies making a great deal of money singing songs and dancing around in videos, right?
There sure are.
And maybe you'd be surprised who's at the top. I'm going to guess that it's Taylor Swift.
Your guess would be incorrect, Phil.
Really?
It is incorrect, and I'm going to explain why. The unstoppable list makers at Forbes.com have released their annual list of the highest paid women in music, and this year, despite selling less records and showing up on less headlines, Katy Perry is number one.
Katy Perry!
Raking in $135 million over the past year.
No kidding.
Or so. Yeah, Katy Perry.
That is something.
She is outdoing Taylor Swift, who came in at a $55 million less sum of $80
million. Wow.
Now, are you curious as to why, Phil?
I am curious as to why.
So what they're saying is even though that Taylor Swift sells more albums and obviously makes more headlines, Katy Perry actually has more lucrative advertising deals.
Yeah.
With makeup companies, and the tour that she's actually on may have brought in more money than Taylor Swift's.
Yep.
So it might be surprising to a lot of people to know that, hey, just because you show up in the papers a little bit more often doesn't make you the highest paid.
Really?
You know, continuing on with the list, you might find some interesting artists.
Oh,
on
yeah.
It.
Do you have the whole list?
Yeah, I do. I have the top 10, including number three, who is Fleetwood Mac.
That's not a lady.
Number three on the list.
That's the name of a band.
Paid. Fleetwood Mac. Is Stevie Nicks, though.
Yeah, well,
isn't it? I don't really?
When I hear that voice, you know what I hear? Fingernails on a chalkboard.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
You're not a fan of Fleetwood Mac?
No. I change the channel, leave the room, whatever it is I can do to get away from it, I do it as quickly as I can.
Well, we can no longer be friends anymore.
What are you talking about?
Sorry to say that, but...
What are you talking about?
You can consider this relationship over, mister.
I mean, okay. I will not deny that Stevie Nicks is the real deal. Okay.
Okay.
She's a rock star and was born that way and just came into the age of rock stardom at a very young age. And she's, like I said, the real deal. But she's really difficult for me to listen to when she's singing.
Yeah, fair enough. Different strokes for different folks. They brought in $59.5 million.
And I'm not a fan of Lindsey Buckingham either. Is that a lady or is that a guy?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. They say that the reason. Lindsey Buckingham.
That's a guy.
Yeah.
Who's the other lady?
There's another lady.
What's her name, Mike?
Mike.
Christine McPhee.
McPhee.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, Christine McPhee.
This is how fast I run away. I forget the names.
Mm-hmm.
Christine McPhee. I'm not a fan of her voice either.
Well, how dare me for not remembering also. But what about this person, number four on the list, Lady Gaga with $59 million.
Well,
are you a fan of hers?
I gave up meat for a couple of days after she put on that meat dress.
Did you?
Yeah.
That was the reason why it
wasn't. A couple of days.
Wasn't the World Health Organization report that we read?
Those folks are just trying to tell me what to eat. I don't like them that much.
Number
right
five, Beyonce, coming in at 54.
Whatever happened to her?
Almost $55 million.
She hasn't been in the news at all much, has she? For like year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not unless she's having relationships. Chip troubles with Jay's.
But remember, she released her, it was a surprise release. She came out with an album without telling anybody in advance. Just bingo, Beyonce has a new record. And then after the excitement of that died down and the single ran its piece on popular radio.
Drunk in Love, I think is
that
one.
What it was?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, then nothing. What's she up to?
She's a little bit more underground. You know, just like you don't know many of the rap artists, I think Beyonce's putting out a lot of that music that we don't hear because it's sort of hardcore.
Yeah, underground. She's up there. Does she have like an underground lair in Barbados or something?
Well, underground
like that?
Is a lot bigger than you and I might think because like I said, if I bring up rap artists or country artists, we don't know them as well as other people do, but they have huge
True.
Followings.
Okay, all right, fine.
Britney Spears is also on the list. Jennifer Lopez,
what?
Miranda Lambert, Mariah Carey rounds out the top 10.
Now, let's explore the Britney Spears phenomenon then, because she hasn't had a hit in a while, but she's got her big Vegas review.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably making a nice chunk of money on
$31 million last year.
Wow. And so all of her songs from her hit era are still getting played on radio.
Occasionally.
For the radio that, soccer moms listen to now.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they were younger...
they enjoyed Britney Spears and NSYNC and all those things that were happening at the time. And so now they're 40 or 45 or maybe even 50, and they love Hit Me Baby One More Time, but it gets played on the soccer mom
station.
It gets
played on like K-Big or what MyFM, you know.
Do they have MyFMs all around the country? They probably do.
They
do. Especially that's a format,
right? It's an iHeartMedia-owned venue. So
right, yeah.
You can get it anywhere.
So she gets royalties every time that music plays.
Well, I'll also have you know that I just heard today that Britney Spears is working on a new album, and it's supposed to be spectacular. It's going to be huge.
Huge?
Yeah.
How many more times can we use that reference today? I hope that's the last time. All right. Well, one thing that you can't talk about Britney Spears.
Rihanna, though. I'm sorry. Rihanna rounds
out the
top 10.
Oh, she's on the
list? Yeah, she's number 10.
She's a good singer, too. All right. Now, here's a topic that you can't bring up Britney Spears without bringing up this topic. Did you know that today's a special day?
Today is a special day.
It is?
You know why?
Why?
Because it's another day I get to spend in the studio with you, Phil.
Oh, great. Thanks. You don't know what the next topic is.
I try
is,
to kiss
you?
Ass without.
Do you know what the next topic is? Remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, today is a very special day. You know, today's National Donut Day. Did you know that?
Wow. Sorry, Britney Spears.
More crazy than that, there are actually two National Donut Days a year.
One isn't enough. Donuts are so good, we have to have two National Donut Days.
Yes, donuts are good. If you're wondering why we would celebrate deep-fried dough dunked in frosting twice a year, I'll explain quickly here.
Yes, why?
Every summer on the first Friday in June, which has already happened, we eat as many donuts as we can because the Salvation Army established the holiday back in 1938 to honor the dough lassies, who were female volunteers that made donuts for soldiers overseas. So that's
the dough lassies.
The dough lassies. That's a legit reason to have a holiday over donuts, right?
Yeah, right.
They even say that donuts helped win the war.
No, really?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Now, the donut day we celebrate today, November 5th each year, was invented by the National Food Council as a way to sell more goods. So, makes sense, right? Capitalism at its finest.
What does the World Health Organization have to say about donuts, Chris?
They actually put it on the same list as anthrax.
Did they?
Earlier today. Yes. Well, they'll actually kill you instantly if you consume them more than two or three at a time.
So you'll writhe and start sweating and then bleeding from your eyeballs after
foaming
donuts.
From the mouth and then just expiring.
Oh, God.
Actually, a lot of food holidays were created by food council members and food writers. You'd be surprised to know.
Fine. Now, while we're talking about food, you ever do the calculation as to how much money you spend by buying your lunch every day?
Dude, honestly, I've tried this before, and there was a time when I was spending anywhere between $10 and $20 a day, would be somewhere between $3,000 and $5,000 a year.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have the average number, and it's striking, and what it means to your pocketbook, and what it's doing to the fabric of America by eating out your lunch every day. We have that and more coming up next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
I start again.
Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Add.com to the name of the show, and you're at the website. Poke around a little bit, find your favorite way to listen, and subscribe. Or you could just subscribe to the site itself. Every time we post a new show, you'll get an alert in whatever it is that you read RSS feeds with. If you know what that means, if that sounds way too technical, just click the thing and then follow the instructions, and the thing will work, and then you'll have a thing that gets the thing.
Very efficient, by the way. Your site works as good, if not better, than iTunes or any of the other platforms.
By the way, it's your site too, my friend.
Our site.
Yeah.
Our site works very effectively.
We just had a moment there.
I think so.
Yeah. Going out to lunch might be the only thing that keeps you sane at work, but you'd save a lot of money if you just started bringing your food or stealing other people's lunches out of the fridge. You don't do that, do you? A new survey by Visa. And why would they do this? It seems counterintuitive that they would scare people away from spending money at lunch because people flash the Visa when they do that, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, a new survey by Visa found that the average person spends $11 when they go out for lunch. That's $55 a week and more than $2,500 a year.
Huh.
And you got yours up to $5,000 a year. Huh?
Well, only because they say how much? $11 a day?
On average. You know, because some days you're going to go to the Taco Bell and spend $6. Other days you're going to go to the sit-down restaurant, you're going to spend $18. And so it kind of averages out to $11.
Okay, but Phil, I mean, I'm no mathematician, but let's do a little bit of basic math. $11, let's just round that to 10.
Yeah.
There's 365 days a year.
But you don't go out to lunch 365
right,
days.
Okay.
You go out to lunch 5 times 52.
Fair enough. And 52 weeks.
And to take that down to 49 because you probably have 2 to 3 weeks of vacation.
Yeah, plus holidays, maybe you're eating in a little bit more.
So maybe 45 weeks
right.
after you figure all of that out.
Good point.
So every time it's... you're talking about $10 a day, so $50 a week.
Yeah.
So that's 500 times 5. Yeah, 2,500,
mm-hmm.
more or less. They actually rounded it up a little bit. If it's less than 50 weeks,
yeah,
they figured 2 weeks of vacation. Didn't factor the holidays. Now, people who bring their lunch to work spend $6.30 a day. So that would average $23.50 a week. And so that's, you know, what you paid at the grocery store
yeah.
on the product that it took to make a sandwich or a breakfast burrito or whatever it is that you make at home. So that works out to $1,100 a year. Average person goes out to lunch twice a week and packs something or eats at home the rest of the week. And the survey also found that men are more likely to go out to lunch than women and spend about 60% more on their food. And finally, 1% of people spend an average... 1%, the 1%ers spend an average of $50 a day on lunch.
Yeesh, on lunch? Well, yeah, the 1%ers, okay, yeah.
Well, a couple of martinis, that's what, $20?
Mm-hmm.
And you
fresh peel and eat shrimp
yeah,
before you have your surf and turf.
You add that garlic toast, you know, that's $12 right there.
Yeah, living the good life.
Garlic toast used to be, you know, gratis, but now they, is that the word? Is that the word when it's free, right?
Gratis.
So, you know, I used to get the garlic toast all the time until it showed up with, you know, flakes of gratis on it. And I said, hey, what is this?
I don't want any gratis on my food.
No, thank you
just
very
out
much.
Of here.
Please. Didn't order gratis. Now, the when you're driving around town, does it make you mad when you see all the graffiti on the buildings? It does me. I mean, some of it is, okay, frankly, it is pretty artistic. There's some artistic guys out there. But
sure.
To me, it's the ultimate disrespect when they spray paint on a building. It's not your property.
Yeah.
Somebody else's stuff. You're supposed to respect other people's property, right?
And it's even worse if they do it on like public land, like parks and
yeah.
places like that. Where...
Or like a statue that's supposed
yes.
to memorialize somebody,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly.
So, so that's not only disrespectful, it's completely selfish. But the fact is, there's some artistic people out there, and I wish sometimes that their spray paint would just be invisible.
Well, I have something that you might like then, Phil.
Oh, what's that?
Well, there's a cool new innovation in art springing forward from South Korea, and it's been dubbed Project Monsoon. And the Art Institute of Chicago and color matching system company Pantone? Are painting the pavements with a special hydrochromic paint that changes from transparent to opaque when wet.
Hydro what?
Hydrochromic.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I thought it was hydrochromatic, but I stuck a T in there earlier without...
Yeah,
unnecessarily.
So
hydrochromic.
Water, chromic, I don't know.
Color, I believe. Chromic yeah. may have something
yeah,
to
something
do with color.
Color
yeah.
Something, yeah, I don't know. We'll look that up. But anyway, you don't see it unless it gets wet.
You don't see it unless it gets wet. So when it rains... The art that you have created comes to life, and there are beautiful depictions of rivers and rainbow fish, turtles, pink whales, all kinds of stuff springing up right underneath people's feet each time it rains.
Yeah.
And it's quite a beautiful scene.
Well, okay, fine. Here in California, Southern California especially,
mm-hmm.
it rains so infrequently that when we get 1/100th of an inch of rain, all the local TV stations go on team coverage storm watch.
And all the local freeways go into gridlock.
Yeah, and everybody else stays home. So if you're a graffiti artist using this hydrochromic paint, no one's going to see your stuff. So there.
Right. By the way, you can check out hashtag Project Monsoon on Twitter if you want to see a collection of some of these murals.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, I've got something random here for you.
Good. I love random stuff.
You have a nice full head of hair.
I do all right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That may change. Maybe not. Maybe you're one of those
not
guys.
Like Mike's. Mike's got a whole bushel going on.
I mean,
there.
Mike's practically braiding his eyebrows with his hairline.
I know. It's that's unbelievable. Like,
yeah. That's got
crazy.
A great head of hair.
Sure
anyway, a full head of hair, like Mike's, is strong enough to support approximately 24,000 pounds.
20? How many? 24,000?
12 tons.
Jeez.
12 tons. Money? 12 a full head of hair. Now think about it. One strand of hair can support about 3 ounces. But together, it's amazing what
the tensile strength increases.
So when you see that Guinness dude with the ponytail pulling a train with his ponytail?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See? Now the train's on wheels. You know, maybe if they took the wheels off, could he still pull it? I don't know.
Yeah. Or how about the day when he finally weakens up in the scalp a little bit and it all just riffs off at once? Do you imagine
would
that
would you pay
scene?
To see that?
I would have to look. It'd be like watching a train wreck.
And once you see it, you can't unsee it. Yeah, train wreck. Gotcha. Let's see. You know who Steven Spielberg is?
I think I do.
Yeah, of course you do. His career was launched, and I didn't know this, when he directed the first episode of the TV show Columbo. Back in 1971.
I loved Columbo.
Yes, everybody did.
Yeah.
It's a national treasure. Peter Falk was the actor, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Him and that lazy eye and all his crazy questions.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, salespeople train off of Columbo a little bit where they, you know, before they're walking out the door. Oh, one more question.
Yeah. You know? See, that's what he did every time.
Yeah.
You know, one more thing, sir.
Yeah, because they've got their, he waits for them to let down their guard a little bit. Whew, got rid of him. Okay, fine. I'm feeling good. Body language is great.
Oh, yeah, you're
I'm
right. That makes perfect sense.
Right?
They completely relax for a moment.
And then, oh, by the way, one more question. Sure, whatever you want. If it'll get you to leave a little bit faster. And then they ask the question, and that's when he catches you. That's when he gets you. Wow. But anyway, Spielberg launched his career there, directed the first episode of that. And then shortly after that, he got together with McLeod. See, Columbo and McLeod didn't get along very well. You know who played McLeod?
McLeod, by the way, that's Highlander, right?
No, McLeod is Dennis Weaver.
Oh.
There was a TV show called McLeod. That was Dennis Weaver. And Dennis Weaver was the main actor in the made-for-TV movie Duel.
Duel.
Have you seen Duel?
I have not seen Duel.
No. What, really?
Yeah. Am I missing out on a great piece of cinematic history?
I figure maybe you weren't too young to see it.
I mean, I'm sure it was maybe...
I forced my daughters to watch it.
Did you?
And they thought it took way too long.
You tortured them?
They said, Dad, this movie could have lasted 15 minutes and gotten the point across.
Yeah.
But it's 90 minutes of tension is what it is.
Good. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a Del Toro movie.
Yeah, a little bit. Like
90
that.
Minutes of tension.
Yeah. It's a little bit of blood.
Okay. Good. I like it. McLeod, I think, was a character in Highlander, though.
You may be right.
There can be only one. That's the...
McLeod.
Yes.
Yeah. The word mortgage
is
a combination of two old French words.
Okay.
Mort and gudge.
Okay, good. All right.
I don't know if that's there how they go. Pronounce it. Probably more and gage. Right?
Okay.
Mortgage.
Mortgage.
Which literally translated means death pledge.
Oh, that's funny because that's, I think, what marriage also translates to. Maybe those came from same beginnings.
Yeah, maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I'm pretty sure you have no clue what you're talking about. All right, let's see. Coming up a little later in the program, we did that. Let me just do this right now because this is important. Hang on a second.
Good.
Yeah.
What do we got? Lay it on us.
Men... Well, most of us aren't cocky enough to say we do most of the chores around the house. Mm-hmm. But we do think that we're doing an equal share, most of us. And our wives strongly disagree with that concept. New poll from the Pew Research folks found that 56% of fathers say they split household chores and responsibilities equally with their wives. But 50% of mothers disagree, and they say definitely that they do more. Now, here the women do. Here are a few more results. 55% of mothers stay home alone with the kids when they're sick. Only 4% of dads do that. 46% of couples say they both work full-time. 26% of dads work full-time and the moms stay home. 6% say the mom works full-time and the dad stays home. And here's the final one. 60% of women who work full-time say it's tough for them to balance their job and their family versus 52% of men who say that because when they get home, mom is busy taking care of all the stuff that dad should.
Well, there you go. I would say don't argue with the women.
Yeah. Hey, ever think about renting out your home or a private room in your home to a vacation traveler? A website called Airbnb is a clearinghouse for that sort of arrangement, but lawmakers saw fit to put the screws to this activity, comparing average folks renting out their homes to year-round illegal hotels. One of the most successful Airbnb hosts joins us next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Airbnb is in the news. You know what that is? It's a website where homeowners and others who have property available, they offer their rooms or an entire house for daily rental to vacation travelers. A lot of controversy about this lately, and we'll explore that with a woman who is Airbnb's home sharer and has been one for 4 years. Recently named Super Host, whatever that means, but we'll find that out as well in just a moment. Chris Caldera, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Caldera, that's correct, right? Is that how you
say
it?
Yeah, you got it right.
Oh,
yeah,
good. Thank you. Now, for folks who don't know, what is Airbnb?
Airbnb is basically, it's a platform. It's a website that connects travelers to people like me who have extra space in their home to rent out. So by the night.
Okay.
And then, of course, as you said, it's also people, it can also be people who have an entire apartment that they can rent out.
So does money trade hands when the people are in town, or does it all happen on the website?
It all happens on the website. That's actually one of the nice things about it from a host perspective and from a guest perspective, I think, just not having to deal with the financial stuff in your interactions.
Yeah. All right. So what do you rent out?
I rent out, I have a two-bedroom apartment in San Francisco, and I rent out basically the master bedroom, which has like an attached bathroom to it. So it's, you know, and I live there, so I'm there all the time when the guests are there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep.
And so do you mind saying how much people pay?
I don't mind. I mean, it ranges depending on demand. So like right now, it's a pretty slow month, November. So it's right now it's around 100 a night, but typically it's more like $139, $149 a night.
Yeah, and out of a typical month during the high season, how many nights out of a month would you say you book?
Usually all of them.
Wow.
In a whole year, I might have total 2 weeks that don't rent.
So you're banking $3,000 to $4,000 a month off of this.
Yeah, that's probably right. Of course, it's a 1099 form, so like they don't take taxes out. So you have to pay taxes at the end of the year.
Right.
That's probably about right.
Okay, so I think for folks who haven't done this yet, and that's a majority of people, I suspect, the first question that would come to mind is it safe?
Yeah, that's always people's first question. I can only, speak from my experience, but it's been incredibly safe. I've never had anything happen. I've hosted hundreds of guests. I think, you have to, like we were just talking about the platform, the website, these people have already given up their credit card information, their contact information. I think it's unlikely that they would choose me as, a potential target for theft or anything like that because they would be very easily traced.
And so that's never happened then?
It's certainly never happened to me.
Yeah.
It's quite, the experience is quite the opposite. I mean, people come and they bring gifts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're incredibly... It's actually a really lovely experience.
But see, we know that you're a good person, that you're not a freak, as far as we can tell, and you have a good reputation if you've been promoted as a super host. Mm-hmm. So, but on the other hand, I mean, the other side, the Airbnb mm-hmm. people, I mean, we don't know where they're coming from necessarily. And if let's say I just get involved now, I start renting out a private room in my house, I really don't know what kind of a freak's going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Do I?
I think if you're unfamiliar with the way the system works, you know, I could see why people might think that.
Yeah.
But the Airbnb has a whole system. You know, you can't just get on there. You have to, like, put your picture on, and you have to create a profile, and you have to give information about yourself, and you have to be verified in various ways.
Yeah. Okay, so everything's traceable, and if you want to become an international crime lord, then fine, go ahead and steal somebody's curio out of their house. But you want to act nice if you want to keep benefiting from this arrangement.
Yeah, and there's also a system within Airbnb where you review each other. Every guest reviews me, and I review every guest.
Public shaming. It works.
that or, yeah, public praise.
Yes.
It works. Yeah, but it works both ways. So
people
it
like that.
Everybody honest.
Now, in the news this week, San Francisco voters, which I imagine you went to the polls on this, defeated a proposition that would have put some regulatory clamps on Airbnb and similar arrangements. Now, what do you think the perception is that led lawmakers or others to believe Airbnb needed the screws tightened?
Well, I mean, we have a very terrible housing crisis in San Francisco, right? So it's you don't want to be looking for an apartment these days in the city because the apartments are extremely expensive and there are very few of them available. And so what's happening is some, I mean, it's true in my case, you know, if I weren't renting out to Airbnb travelers, I would be renting that room to somebody, to a roommate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking that room off the market. And then, of course, it's even magnified when you've got people that are taking entire apartments off the market to rent them on Airbnb. So the perception is that that there are fewer apartments available and that's driving up the cost of rentals. So I think that's a big reason why there's a lot of anti-Airbnb sentiment in the city.
So do you think the hotels feel like you're competing directly with them?
From what I understand, I don't think so, because first of all, the vacancy rates are really small at the hotels. The hotels all sell out in San Francisco. And so I don't think that they see Airbnb as a real threat. And certainly that's not what I've heard about in the stories.
But politically speaking, San Francisco perhaps was a test market for this sort of legislation. I'm just pontificating about it, mm-hmm. and that the hotel lobby on a national basis said, well, you know, if we can get San Francisco, then we could turn this into mm-hmm. kind of a national movement in some towns where the hotels are not sold out because mm-hmm. San Francisco is a desirable destination. But
right.
But let's say the hoteliers in Poughkeepsie are having a right. great deal more trouble with the folks who are renting out their places because they can't compete. So I'd say maybe the majority of cities would be more like Poughkeepsie than like San Francisco.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think you raise a really good point. I think, you know, San Francisco's pretty much, it's an exception. It's a tiny city and it's a very desirable one and there are very few places to stay. So I could see where it could be an issue in other cities.
Yeah. By the way, I almost forgot to ask you, what is a super host?
That's just a designation for people who host a lot, like me. It just means that you never cancel any reservations. They have various criteria that they evaluate you on.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that you have a very high response rate. You know, like my response rate is 100%, so anytime anybody writes me, I always write them back.
Yeah.
I never cancel. And then I also have 5-star reviews, at least 85% 5-star reviews.
And your place is fancy?
I don't know if you call it fancy, but I try to make it as nice as I could.
What part of San Francisco is it in? Is it over there near the near Knob Hill? Or I don't know what I'm talking
no.
about. You do it.
No, it's near the Castro area. It's in a very desirable part of the city. It's like smack dab in the middle of the city, so it's really close to everything. You can easily get downtown. You can easily get to Golden Gate Park. You can. It couldn't be a better location in that way. But the apartment itself is nothing, you know, fancy. But people seem to like it.
Oh, yeah, apparently. $3,000 to $4,000 a month. Good for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, pleasure to speak with you. I frankly might even look into this. It sounds like fun.
You should come and stay. You should come and stay. Next time you come to San Francisco, you can stay at my place.
Okay. Wow. All right. You hear that, honey? I'm getting hit on the program right here.
Well, no, not quite that.
No?
Not quite in that way.
Okay, fine. But a guy can dream, right? Chris Caldera, thank you very much. Airbnb super host in San Francisco. I appreciate you coming on the program and explaining some of this to us.
Thanks for having me. So.
All right, you're welcome. All right, so what do you think? Make some extra money doing that, huh?
Absolutely. What's, if you have the space for it.
How
and,
about you? You have the space?
Patience.
You got a spot?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, we could probably make it happen, but it would be cramped quarters.
Yeah, okay. All right, good. Now, coming up next, we are the final segment of the program. I can't believe how fast this show is going. There was a week ago or two, it was a week ago, where I suggested that the Los Angeles Dodgers should pull one of the most historic, one of the players who participated in one of the most historic plays ever for the Dodgers should be their next manager. And now there's some movement that, in fact, that may be the case. I am honestly... Every day, I am more and more amazed at how much influence this little program has on popular culture and all sorts of industry out there, including professional sports.
They're listening, Phil.
You'll find out what we're talking about next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
I start again.
Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at the Portsacol Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacol Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends. It's our final segment, and let's see. Where are we? The Dodgers. Can we go there, Chris?
The Dodgers.
Yeah? Who are we talking as a possible candidate to be the manager of the team?
It's a long list, Phil. They're trying to replace Don Mattingly, and there is a list longer than my arm of potential candidates. But this week, they did interview Kirk Gibson, which would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be.
That'd be awesome. He's a legendary Dodger. He played with the team for 3 years and led them in the 1988 World Series victory. He's got some experience, too. I mean, he managed the Diamondbacks from 2011 to 2014, voted Manager of the Year in 2011. He called games on the air for the Detroit Tigers. So let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's get Kirk Gibson.
Is he healthy?
You know, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease back in April of earlier this year. But I think we've seen enough of people going through Parkinson's to know that it's a manageable disease.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have a lot to consider there in the Dodgers front office. But one of the things they'll be considering is World Series hero, 1988 World Series hero, Kirk Gibson.
Yeah.
Say he has a real no-nonsense managerial style.
Yeah. In an improbable year, the impossible has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vin.
Yeah.
At his greatest.
That's right. Now, here's something for you. I have the 10 NFL teams with the drunkest fans.
Okay. I'm guessing New England Patriots, number one.
But. Cincinnati Bengals take on the Cleveland Browns Thursday night.
Tonight.
For Thursday night football tonight, the Browns are 2-6. Bengals are undefeated, so it's pretty clear who the favorite is. But even if the Browns lose, their fans can console themselves with this: Bengals fans are totally boring and don't know how to party. The makers of a breathalyzer app called Back Tracker, that's BAC, looked at user data from NFL fans in different cities, checked what their average blood alcohol content was on game day this season, and came up with the 10 teams with the drunkest fans. Bills fans, Buffalo Bills fans are the drunkest, with an average blood alcohol level of 0.076, just under the legal limit to drive. Lions and Eagles fans tied for second at 0.069, followed by Browns, Cardinals, Chargers, Dolphins, Colts, Redskins, and 49ers.
What an illustrious list to be a part of.
Yeah. No Raiders in there. Are you surprised? The Bengals supporters are the most sober fans in the NFL, with an average blood alcohol level of just 0.015, followed by the Titans, Saints, Giants, Texans, Ravens, Broncos, Seahawks, Cowboys, and Patriots. Unfortunately, there wasn't enough data for five teams, Rams, Raiders, Jets, Jaguars. And I think those guys probably go under the radar because they would never get anywhere near a breathalyzer app. Because they're just drinking irresponsibly.
I remember reading about that Backtrack mobile breathalyzer and thinking to myself, who would do that? Because, you know, when you use it, it has a setting on it. It will automatically post what your blood alcohol level is after you blow into it. It'll post it on your social media sites. And I'm thinking,
yeah,
what kind of lush wants everybody to know where he's at and how drunk he is, he or she?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, that's good. But it seems to me that if you're going to drink two beers, depending on your weight, that might take you past the legal limit. So are people waiting 5 or 6 hours before they hit that breathalyzer app, do you think?
Who knows? I think that, you know, if you put it in the hands of me and my friends when we were going to college, we would have had a competition to see who could blow the highest number at any moment.
When you had that helmet with the beer in it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even with hard alcohol in the helmet.
Oh, man.
Run around with one of those.
Now, you want to hear some insight into my brain. Last night at the hockey game, the Ducks versus the Florida Panthers, there was an intermission contest where we got some frat boys from a local college, and they came out there, and we have these inflatable, they're called Zorbs. Usually you get inside the inflatable ball, and it has a little superstructure in there.
Oh, yeah.
And you play bubble soccer, basically, and you crash into people, and you fall, and you don't get hurt, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's great.
So what we do, we got the frat boys. I'm sure they were drunk. They had nacho cheese all over their face, and they came out onto the ice, and what they had to do was toss these Zorbs and have them land in lighted circles on the ice. And if they landed one of their giant Zorb balls into a lit dot on the ice, they would win a prize. And we called it giant beer pong.
Okay.
And so,
do you think they would be good at?
Well, I don't know. I immediately thought, gosh, you know, I'm firing off a note to the folks at the Solo Cup company to see. They must have like a employee picnic or something like that where they had a 6 or 7 foot tall red Solo Cup. Don't you think?
Probably. But you know what I was just thinking of when you said that is light up rimmed Solo Cups. I thought that's where you were going with it, and what a novel idea that would be.
Oh, sure. Okay, fine. You hear that, Solo people? Anyway, but I just thought they could throw those, bounce the Zorb, throw it as high as they can. They're heavy, too, but and awkward, and you're out in the ice. But if they could bounce one and land it in a six-foot-tall giant red Solo cup, now that would be something, wouldn't it?
Sure would.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the audience would have to take a drink.
Yes. So you're saying that giant Solo cup would have to be full of beer?
No, well, yeah, or something. Maybe not. Just it would be a good visual. Anyway, I fired off the note to Solo Cup, and they got back to me, and they said, we don't have a six-foot-tall Solo Cup.
Hmm.
You might try Googling it to see if somebody else manufactures one.
Just an FYI, I actually just copyrighted that idea about the light-up rim Solo Cups. So
That's great. You should. You should copyright it.
Yeah, it's done.
I might alter it a little bit and get a trademark on it. Maybe a patent.
Oh, copyright. Yeah, duh. That's not the way I'm supposed to go about it, right?
Too late. Somebody got a patent on it.
Dang it.
Yeah. All right. But can you believe the Solo Cup people? We don't manufacture one of those. Come on. There wasn't a Solo Cup in a parade somewhere?
Mm-mm.
Right?
No.
There had to have been something somewhere, a picnic, an employee party of some sort where they had a giant Solo Cup. Just one. It's got to be sitting in a prize closet somewhere at the Solo Cup company.
I agree with you. You think that they would have come out with that a long time ago?
Yeah. Maybe there's a spinning giant Solo Cup in front of the Solo Cup headquarters.
I'd like to take the giant Solo Cup and try to do flip cup with it.
Does that work?
You put it on the edge of a picnic table, and then you have to get down in the squat position just to get it to flip. You know, you got to get your hands down in the like you're deadlifting.
Yeah,
and then just put a mean fling on it.
Yeah, all right. Yep, very good. Now, we like to end the program very often with a heartwarming story. And I've pulled the trick way too many times where I said that, and then I had some ridiculous story of depravity. But this time, it is a heartwarming story, I promise. A family in Northern England lost their 10-year-old cat, Phoenix, 18 months ago. And they put out flyers all over the neighborhood, but they just couldn't find Phoenix. Here, Phoenix, here, kitty, 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 kitty. Couldn't find Phoenix. Michelle is the mom. She's 33. She says her 5-year-old son, Ronnie, was devastated. Then their other cat died last month. So it's like a catastrophe. So they decided to get Ronnie a new cat and picked one out at the local shelter. But when they went to pick up the new cat last weekend, their old cat was sitting in the cage right next to it. Total coincidence. First, Ronnie noticed that it looked a lot like Phoenix. Then they realized it was Phoenix. So Michelle, the mom, says she got really excited, then got pretty emotional. There's a photo of him standing next to the cage crying, the boy, when he pets it. It turns out someone brought Phoenix in about 2 months ago. Boy, in England, they let the cats stay in the cage a long time, don't they? Out here, it's, what, 3-4 days, something like that? And he'd just been put up for adoption. His microchip, he had one of those, was registered under an old address and an old phone number, so there was no way for the shelter to track his family down.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, Ronnie and his mom showed up before someone else picked him.
Cool.
And there's your heartwarming story.
See, that is a heartwarming story.
Bait and switch depravity.
Yeah, except for we still have a little time. Can I throw some depravity in there?
Yeah, go for it.
Here's a romantic proposal story from a California couple. Lucas Unger proposed to Carly Leifkus on Halloween, substituting the traditional diamond with his wisdom tooth.
Oh! Did she accept it?
She did. She accepted it. They're going to get married. They said, we've never been a traditional couple, so why start now?
Boy, I hope you got all the plaque off of that.
Weird picture, wisdom tooth housed in a ring like that.
Oh, God. It's a little creepy. Hey, we love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. We're on Twitter at Faf Show, PHAF Show. We're on Facebook. Look for Phil Hewlett and Friends. You'll see it. Like us. If you listen to us on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a review. Leave us a voicemail. It's free on the website. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, who forgot to show up, just double-checking. Our theme song performed and composed by Russ Monson. For Chris and all the friends, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk with you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
I start again. Monday, November 9th at 6 p.m. in a very rare Southern California appearance, Melodyne at the Ports of Call, Waterfront Dining. For ticket information, call 310-833-3553. And I hear the echo.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Ports of Call Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.